This is News in No Time. Ed Gordon on today's roundtable. President Bush answers criticism over the war on terror. Joining us from our bureau in New York, Bob Meadows, writer with People magazine. Walter Fields also joins us. He's CEO and publisher of the NorthStarNetwork.com. He joins us today from KISS FM in New York City. And from our headquarters in Washington, D.C., Joe Davidson, an editor with the Washington Post. I thank you all for joining us. As the nation heard, we listened to the president yesterday as he talked about the continuation of his war on terror, if you will. We have a little bite from that press conference. Let's take a listen.
Some observers also claim that America would be better off by cutting our losses and leaving Iraq now. It's a dangerous illusion, refuted with a simple question. Would the United States and other free nations be more safe or less safe with Zarqawi and bin Laden in control of Iraq, its people, and its resources?
I should correct myself. I inadvertently called it a press conference. It was actually billed as a major speech, Walter Fields,
by the
White House. Can one really seriously consider this, should we, a major speech?
I wouldn't consider it a major speech, and I don't think the president did himself any favors yesterday with those remarks. He apparently is the only one, perhaps with Dick Cheney, that absolutely believes that the war in Iraq is tied to our fight against terrorism. And he keeps making this repeated claim over and over and over again. It's been disputed by everyone who comes before a congressional panel. So once again, this president attempts to convey to the American public the sense that our presence in Iraq has something to do with the war against terrorism, when it absolutely does not. And I think one of the problems here is that unless Democrats on the Hill lose some of their timidity and go after this president, I really believe it's time to talk about impeachment, because I think this president has really violated the trust of the American people with this war in Iraq.
Strong words from Walter Fields. Joe Davidson, let me ask you something. In the juxtaposition of looking at the reasons that we went to war given by the Bush administration and what came to light later on, when you hear the president talk about whether we'd be better off and whether Iraq is better off, its people, its resources, etc., run by Zarqawi and bin Laden, that really slaps in the face of what we heard from them just a few months ago and how we were on the right track with Democratic elections. Can he use and play both ends against the middle?
Well, it's interesting. You have people within the administration, certainly within the military, telling Congress, painting a pretty pessimistic picture before Congress as to the readiness of the troops, the Iraqi troops on the ground, and how the availability of certain troops is actually going down because they simply are not ready. And then when the president gives his address, it's a much rosier picture. I think that this kind of discrepancy is part of the reason that the Bush administration, the President Bush himself, has fallen significantly in the polls. He's at his lowest point ever in the polls, and that's largely because of Iraq. It's also because of the way the administration handled Hurricane Katrina. But I do think that the American people simply do not believe that the war is going well, and there seems to be ample evidence for that, and much of it coming from the mouths of generals.
Bob, Walter suggests that Congress is too timid in dealing with this president, Democrats in particular, obviously. But when you see that the Senate is taking a look at, in fact, handing over $440 billion in military spending, and I believe about 80 to 90 billion of that would go directly to the war in Iraq, that really does fly in the face of the numbers that Joe Davidson just talked about in terms of how America sees this. Is this, and this is the question that has really been going on since the beginning of the war, at least being raised, I should say, is this president that out of touch with what America is looking at and expecting?
Bush is just a stubborn, stubborn man. He said it yesterday. He said it 1,000 times. Never back down. And as Walter pointed out, he continues to tie this, to attempt to tie this to 9/11, Iraq 9/11. He is out of step with what the American people think. He's not only out of touch with what Democrats think, but obviously because of his Supreme Court nomination, he's also out of touch with what his own base thinks. this is why his numbers continue to fall, because now he's facing critique from both sides, and it's really difficult to think he's going to recover from this.
Walter, the words never back down, we've heard it from this president, but I would contend that there are a whole lot of folks in the heartland who may not even agree with Bush, but who believe that that is a mantra that we have held true to in this land for a long time, and they don't want to see any commander-in-chief back away, even from a quagmire.
I think that was true in the beginning of this conflict, but what I think you see happening right now is as the numbers of American service personnel continue to climb, those that are killed, I think even those people in the heartland now are beginning to question the wisdom of not having an exit strategy in Iraq. It's one thing to say you're going to go in, but it's another thing to say how you're going to get us out. And he's facing the same sort of Vietnam problem that Lyndon Johnson faced. You know, it's easy to commit war. It's how do you end this thing? And I think even people in his own party are now saying, Mr. President, it's time. You have to put forth a plan to tell us how you're going to pull our troops out of Iraq. They have no plan. And they are faced with a fight that they were totally unprepared for. And now you see chaos breaking out. He talks about terrorism. You can't create, you can't allow, you know, Al-Qaeda to have Iraq. Well, he created the conditions for Al-Qaeda to have Iraq. And now we're stuck.
Yeah, I think part of the difficulty is that he knows that if he pulls out, as he has said, that the forces that are considered to be the enemy of the United States will probably take over, will certainly raise havoc within Iraq, and will be seen as a failure. So he clearly is stuck. I think the American people are stuck because they don't, even for those who really dislike the war, even for those who feel the United States should never have gotten into this war, many of those also feel that pulling out now would kind of leave the Iraqi people in a one big fix created by the invasion.
All right. Let me turn our attention to an interesting point, and this kind of speaks to, if you will, the quagmire that the military finds itself in. We are now seeing something that heretofore the military was quite proud that they did not go this route. We've been talking on this program quite a bit about the shortfall of recruits. The Army, for instance, has a shortfall of 6,000 to 8,000 soldiers over the last 12 months alone. We are now seeing that the military is starting to reach out and accept high school dropouts. Bob Meadows, when we look at this, and I was also reading an article just the other day that talked about now the recruitment that has been hot and heavy in high schools across this country now is starting to reach into elementary schools as we see what they call these little junior cadets reaching into the fifth and sixth grade. Many people see it as an indoctrination to get young people to understand and see the importance of the military in their lives. What some will say this kind of dumbing down of the Army and the military when it speaks to high school dropouts and the idea of reaching into even younger and younger minds to try to recruit people to the military and its service?
I guess one thing it might show is that they have a lot more encounters planned, a lot more uses for the Army plan down the road if they're looking at people who are only in elementary school. With all the commercials that you see on TV, you know, the black kid talking to his mother and she smiles and says, all right, that sounds good to me. The Army is really, really facing a crisis. The military is really facing a crisis. And that really came to light during Katrina when people were like, where's the National Guard? Oh, right, they're all overseas. This is something that Bush has said, not going to institute a draft, not going to do that. So you've got to open your doors a little bit wider to draw on as many people as you can without instituting a draft.
Walter, the idea that you really are at a crossroads again. If you don't want to institute a draft, it's almost as if we are echoing the same sentiment that we heard with dollars to pay for the Gulf restoration, the idea of we're not going to raise taxes. Well, if you're not going to institute a draft, you're going to have to find people in other corners that perhaps heretofore you haven't gone.
Well, we're at a significant crossroads in this country when you have a situation where citizens do not want to enlist in the military. And the fact of the matter is, this is the first conflict that we've ever had where active duty personnel have publicly questioned the commander-in-chief. We have enlisted men and women who have gone on record to say that their army or their Marines or their Navy there is not prepared for this war. So it doesn't surprise me that young men and women would look at this situation and not want to enlist. And I also think we have a lot of parents now who are finally sitting down and talking to their children and saying, do you know what this means, the consequence of you signing this paper? I think people are finally waking up. And when Representative Charles Rangel over 2.5 years ago said we needed a draft, I think he was on to something, because he understood. It was almost a premonition. He was able to see the quagmire that was getting ready to hit, and you can't support this type of effort with a volunteer army because people simply will not go, and we're seeing it in the numbers.
You know, I think that Rangel's call for a draft was really a way of protesting the coming war at that point. And I think that one reason you really don't see the same level of protest against the war in Iraq as you did with against the war in Vietnam, although clearly there have been some protests and some recent large ones, is because there is no draft. Much of the protest was during the Vietnam period was an anti-draft protest in addition to being an anti-Vietnam protest. Mm-hmm.
And the Army, they've already shortened the term of service. Now they're going to ask Congress to increase the enlistment bonuses. So these are really, and this is still not working. This is something that the gentleman said they really need to resolve their recruiting problem. Well, their recruiting problem is that they have these various wars going on and these different soldiers are dying and coming home in coffins. That is a problem that they're really not going to be able to tackle.
Here's something now, go ahead, Walter.
Another disturbing trend is their marketing for recruitment. It is heavily geared towards urban communities. They are heavily investing in black media, whether it's magazines or on television. There is a real pitch towards our community to try to get our young people to enlist, and they're trying to make it look sexy and glamorous. They're trying to put it in the style of videos because they think that's what our young people will be attracted to. So we really need to open our eyes in terms of what is actually going on with the military coming into our high schools, coming into our middle schools, trying to recruit our kids.
And doubling the bonus from $20,000 to $40,000 is certainly a part of that. But, you know, I think it's also worth noting as part of this conversation, though, that the Army says that its retention is above its goal, that they retained 108% of its goal of its goal in terms of the Army's retention. So in some ways, there's a disconnect there between the inability to recruit the number of people they need, yet they are they're more than meeting their goal. Now, perhaps their goal wasn't was set too low to begin with, but that's what they're saying.
Here's an interesting juxtaposition. We had the president giving this speech yesterday, and then we also heard from New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who suggested that there were real and credible threats against the subway system here in New York City. And here's the interesting point. Homeland Security made a point to come out and say, while this chatter was in fact real, they did not see it in the same heightened measure as New York City did. There are a lot of people here in New York who are suggesting that they want to listen to Police Chief Kelly instead of the yes. Homeland Security divisions based on what we've seen over the course of the last month.
I can guarantee you folks who are on the subway this morning are being very cautious and are looking because I think there's really confusion over how these warnings have been issued, particularly from Washington, D.C.
But, you know, it also, if you want to play the Machiavellian game, it also would make sense for the officials in Washington to play up threats like this in order to feed into the desire on the part of the American people, if that's what it is, to fight the war against terrorism and the war in Iraq. So I did find it pretty interesting that the people in Washington were saying essentially these threats are not credible, all the while the officials in New York, who in this case certainly are closer to the situation, are increasing their security.
Well, and suggesting we should note that they did not say they weren't credible, but they felt the heightened concern that New York City was placing on it was perhaps a bit premature.
And that probably stems from the fact that they're not here in New York City. They're not the ones who are going to have to jump on the subway. And you know, a lot of people at my job, when it came around on the email yesterday and on the news conferences, yeah, we looked outside and those bus lines were pretty long, mm-hmm. pretty crowded.
When you think about this, Joe Davidson, the idea that if, in fact, as many people assume, the military is stretched to the seams, there's taxing measures being put on many of the organizations that have to fight terror based on domestic problems here, one more event really is going to challenge this administration and the government, is it not?
Well, I think very much so. In fact, I mean, I think that the government, the administration, is already very challenged. Certainly, in terms of its, we can see that in terms of its plummeting popularity. Of course, President Bush cannot run again, so it will not affect him personally. But we do have the midterm elections coming up, and so we'll can see just how the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, for that matter, meets that challenge, and also its impact on the next presidential election. But there are clearly are a number of things that have been challenging this administration, from the war in Iraq, its drop in popularity, the situation involving various members of the administration or the Republican Party generally being indicted or called before grand jury, so that whole kind of corruption cloud is starting to get a little darker over their heads, the response to Katrina. So, yes, I think there are a lot of challenges out there.
And Walter Fields, there are some real on-the-ground challenges, whether or not you'd be able to deploy people and resources if, in fact, heaven forbid, we face another terrorist attack.
Well, one thing, you know, Katrina should have taught us, and Rita also, and particularly if you look at a city the size of New York, and what I've always cautioned people is to believe that if we have a tragedy of the magnitude of a terrorist or natural in a place like New York City, that all hell would break loose. You cannot evacuate New York City. Mm-hmm. You can't even cordon off parts of this city. It's so large. Yeah. You're talking 8.5 million people. Then if you talk about northern New Jersey, you're going to add another 8 million people. What do you do? We have no plans for that. Yeah. We have no contingencies for that. And I think we're at a point now where we have to realize that our government is really unprepared to handle any of these situations.
All right. Well, let's hope we don't have to face any of those. Some people say it's not if or when, but I'm going to continue to bet on, you know, the if. So we'll keep that. Walter Fields, Joe Davidson, Bob Meadows, thanks very much for joining us today. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.